It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of October. A preseason look at the Raptors and the Jazz. Four things in the NBA that I don't quite understand right now. And get to know the fun Nazlong. Naz Mitrolong, in fact. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! Ha! Much better than yesterday. Much better. Hope you heard the Get to Know Grayson Allen conversation. Enjoyed that. That was yesterday's program. We'll get back to the Culture Club interviews on Thursday and Friday this week with Royce O'Neal and Ricky Rubio. Today's Get to Know Naz Long. And Tuesday is Get to Know, or Wednesday, Get to Know George Niang. So good dudes. I think you'll enjoy those conversations. I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers about the Jazz and the rest of the NBA. Super appreciate you tuning in. You can get the program on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or tell your smart speaker. All right, I believe, I have not been able to check this out yet, but here's my understanding on something. This year, the NBA Audio League Pass is for sale, $9.99. It gives you the audio of every single play-by-play home or road in the NBA. It also gives you, radio, the right to play them on your Alexa Echo or Amazon Alexa. So if you have, I don't think it does on Google Home. I think if you're going to do Google Home, you have to do it through TuneIn. And TuneIn's got a pretty good package also that's another option for you. But if you're interested, Audio League Pass, and then you can, I believe, tell it to play Jazz Radio, and hopefully it doesn't get too confused with Jazz Music versus that, and you can figure it out. I have not tried it yet. I will try it on an off day. I don't know if it's up for the preseason, but that is my understanding, and we'll keep working on that. Today's show, the 2nd of October, is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and Vivid Seats. So glad to have both those sponsors aboard. The Hyundais have some great stuff going on in the month of October, wrapping up a fun September for you, and Vivid Seats. That's all coming up in the crew. All right, let's get to it. The Jazz and the Raptors tonight. This one's a little bit more of a test to see what's going on. So what are the things that Quinn Snyder said he thought the Jazz did really well in game one, and then how much of those transfer into game two is what I think you're trying to watch and what's important. So one of the things Quinn talked about in his press conference, he liked the early action, the early tempo, finding a way to be able to spread the floor offensively and then from in the early transition and break seams and get into the paint early in the offense was something he was very impressed with. He talked yesterday with the media about high passes. This is something that he's brought up a few times, and it will be interesting to see if the Jazz can find a way to vertically challenge above the rim against Serge Ibaka, Jonas Valanciunas, and a really, really good Toronto team. That, to me, is going to be really one of the main things I'm watching in this game, is whether or not how the Jazz have developed the use and understanding of spacing as a team, and whether or not there's something new to what they, what they are being able to develop maybe a little bit here. So I think that's, it's an interesting concept. And I think that, you know, we talk about points gained a lot and my points gained work. And the one thing I would tell you on that is, you know, Gobert's not, you're not going to go run an offense to Rudy. But if you do look at points gained and you start to look at Rudy and Clint Capella and these guys' impact, so the best offensive player in the league is Steph Curry, 4.7 points gained, and then Kevin Durant, 3.5, and James Harden, 3.1, and Karl Anthony Towns, 3, and LeBron, 2.8, and then Anthony Davis, 2.5, and Kyrie Irving, 2.1. All of those make sense. Those are generally agreed upon as the 7th most positively impactful offensive players in the NBA, and they're all great. Rudy Gobert is next, and Clint Capella is next after that. Giannis is then in the next group, and then DeAndre Jordan. Well, okay, but DeAndre Jordan's not an offensive player. He only has 9 scoring opportunities a game, and Rudy only has 10, and Capella only has 11. Well, what could you do as a coach to maintain or increase that? Like, if Rudy Gobert, at the same efficiency level of what he is right now, suddenly went to 14 scoring opportunities a game. He's at 10. That's a mammoth jump, okay? That's a mammoth jump to go from 10 to 14, right? It's a 40% increase. But if you got Rudy one more every quarter somehow, Rudy Gobert becomes the third or fourth most impactful offensive player in the NBA. Right there with Karl Anthony Towns and James Harden. His points gained above average. And you can decide, well, he's not that good. Okay, I don't care. He's 7'2 and that long. He's one of the only guys in the league that can actually do that. Same thing with Capella, and that's a little bit by Harden. But give the guys credit for what they do. If other teams could do it, they do it, and they can't. Other players can't do that. Montrezl Harrell is pretty darn good in the Clippers, but he can't quite do that. Jonas Valanciunas is really big. We're seeing him tonight. He's pretty damn good. They're going to use him less. It's a mistake by Toronto because he's really good, and they're undervaluing the fact that Valanciunas shoots 57% at the rim and gets good field goals, and they're making a mistake on that. But that's besides the point. But he can't do what Rudy and Clint Capella do, and he's really good. So I think that's something to watch. Is it's not suddenly trying to turn Rudy into an offensive player by giving him post-ups or things of that nature, but can you get Rudy one possession more a night at the rim than you did last year? Can you do the same with Derek Favors? That's suddenly trying to get, you know, Derek Favors' points gained was a 0.8. He ends up taking it, you know, he's 56%. He ends up taking an awful lot of mid-range and not very efficient shots. Can you find a way to turn those into something at the rim? It's an interesting discussion. But I think that's something to watch in this one today. I want to say this about Toronto. I'm lost on how people are evaluating Toronto. So here's my thought on this. First of all, I'm not convinced that Nick Nurse is going to be that much better than Dwayne Casey. A lot of times when teams get rid of what I call effort coaches, Monty Williams, and I have swung on this. Let me just be clear. I was Monty Williams, Scotty Brooks in Oklahoma City. A lot of these teams where you kill the guys' X's and O's, the team plays hard every night. You don't give enough credit to the fact that the team plays hard every night. You kill the coach for the lack of X's and O's. And then they move on to their next coach and they actually aren't as good because they don't play as hard and they don't like, it's just right. And in the case of Scotty Brooks in Oklahoma, I think we found out that like Russell Westbrook is unmanageable in a regular offense. He's got to play that way. So I'm not actually convinced that Toronto's done the right thing in firing Dwayne Casey and going to Nick Nurse, who's, you know, X's and O's are supposedly going to be better than Dwayne Casey's inefficient X's and O's. But here's what I really don't understand. The media, and there's 4 of these things today where I am fighting groupthink, and this is number 1. The media for 3 years has killed Dwayne Casey in Toronto for their lack of this, their lack of that, all these things. So last year they bust out, and they're the 3rd-best offensive team and the 5th-best defensive team and the 3rd-best team overall in the NBA. And they add Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, and they get rid of Jakob Poeltl and DeMar DeRozan. Jakob Poeltl's pretty good. DeMar DeRozan, the Raptors have had a better on-floor, off-floor rating with DeMar DeRozan off the floor in 5 of the last 6 seasons. They added a player who's a better offensive player and a better defensive player than DeMar DeRozan, and yet nobody's picking them. It's all about Boston. I think Toronto is by far the 2nd-best team in the NBA. By far. And I don't know why Kyle Lowry's, Howard Beck with me on Locked On NBA, Bleacher Report's great Howard Beck says, well, Kyle Lowry's grumpy. He's always grumpy. But like this team last year was by month defensively, 3rd, 18th, 1st, 5th, 4th. They stopped for a month in March at 18th. They went back in April and clicked in. They were never, they were great. And they got better. Unless their head coach screws it up. So I don't get the narrative of like this ignoring of Toronto. I actually think Toronto, my predictions say Toronto is in a class by themselves in the Eastern Conference. Boston, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Indiana are closely matched 2 through 5. But Toronto, who won 59 games last year and got better and has great depth, even if Kyle Lowry's getting old, DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet are good. I'm a bit lost on this one, but it wouldn't be the first time. Today's show, I'll give you my other three in a second. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. The Hyundai brand is amazing, and the people at Murdoch are great. Our buying, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. Our buying experience at Murdoch was so good, just so pleasant, so straightforward, so timely. Sure, I'm sure there's part of it, frankly, that I'm not going to lie. It's like, okay, David Locke, who's our spokesperson, is buying a car. But actually, that was part was done between Blake and I, that we just did the whole price over text. So that, I'll agree, is a little different. But when we came in to pick up the car, Blake wasn't there. We just went through their systems. Their systems were amazing. And it really was eye-opening to me about how well-run Murdoch Hyundai is and how efficient things are. And then my wife had two issues, and she went back. She wasn't David Locke going back. And I don't mean to sound that arrogantly, but I'm not trying to pretend. I want to make sure that what I'm relaying to you is something I think you would get as the same experience. And my wife went back to take care of two things, and the sales guy was amazing. So I think you'll find out, first off, that the Murdoch family has such amazing pride in what they do as a family in their 92 years in the business. That'll come across to you when you deal with it. The second thing is the Hyundai brand. So pleased with the Santa Fe that we bought. The Kona's the zippy little SUV that would be great for the winter. The Tucson is on a huge sale right now. That's the mid-sized SUV. Amazing deal with all the safety features and all the different aspects to it. And then if you're looking for a hybrid, trying to save some money on the gas and that, I love the Ioniq. Check it all out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. The Naz Long Get to Know interview, Naz Mitro Long Get to Know interview, is upcoming here in a minute. Let me give you my three other items that I'm not following the rest of the NBA groupthink on. Now, I pride myself on a little bit on this, and so, frankly, there's a willingness on my end, I think, to be wrong. That probably my job as the radio voice of the Utah Jazz gives me the freedom to do. In this day and age, I think if you're a reporter and you're coming up through the ranks or you're established and you go say something that's really contrary to what all the other big-time Zach Lowe, Howard Beck, Chris Mannix, Kevin O'Connors of the world are saying, I think you get I've felt it. Like when I've talked about Rudy being a top-10 player, I just get panned. I'm right. I have no doubt I'm right that Rudy's a top-10 player in the NBA. I get annihilated about it, but I don't care because I have another job that, like, so it's like, I kind of get it. Like, you know, when Pelton says something, that's just the way life is. So let me give you three things that I don't necessarily agree with. Okay, I think Brad Stevens is a great coach, but I'm listening to Chris Mannix on the Full 48 today, and he's talking about how Boston has this high-powered offense, which is perfectly executed offense, and does all these amazing things. Okay, that's great. They were 18th in the league offensively last year with an offensive rating of 105.3. Yeah, but it's because of the injuries. No, it wasn't. They were 19th in October, 17th in November, 12th in December, 29th in January, 12th in February, 17th in March, and 21st in April. They were never better than 12th in any month of the entire season offensively last year. I know everyone loves this team. It's incredibly deep. Gordon Hayward's coming back. They've added a star to their lineup. But to my point about Toronto, like, Toronto added Kawhi Leonard. It's being dismissed and saying, well, we're not sure how his engagement is. We don't know that Gordon Hayward can jump. We don't know that Kyrie Irving's knees are going to hold up. And if Kyrie Irving is out, this is the points gained on that roster. Kyrie Irving is 2.1. Jason Tatum is 0.7 and probably going to get a little better. Al Horford's 0.4 points gained per game. Jaylen Brown is 0.2, so he's right at average. He's third year, should get a little better. Gordon Hayward should be positive. He always has been. Marcus Morris is minus 0.4. Semi Ojeleye, everybody loves, is minus 0.5. Aaron Baines is minus 0.6. Terry Rozier is minus 0.8. And Marcus Smart is minus 1.6. That's a bad offensive team. And those are bad offensive players. Marcus Smart's minus 1.6 every night takes away what Kyrie Irving gives you. Almost. Not quite. But add Marcus Morris into it, and now you have taken away everything Kyrie. And then you go add Terry Rozier, and you've taken away what Jason Tatum has given you. And this is a bad offensive basketball team. I know, it switches, it's interchangeable. Not there. Unless Jason Tatum goes bananas, Gordon Hayward regains his all-star form, and I think the first is probably more likely. When Kyrie Irving was on the floor last year, you're absolutely right, they were better offensively, 108.7. When he was off the floor, 101.9. When Marcus Morris is on the floor, they're 104.7 offensively. When Marcus Smart is on the floor, they are 105.9 offensively. They're great defensively. They're great. I think it'll be interesting to see whether they stay as great defensively. But they're great defensively. And their defensive systems are super. And that's why they're really, really good. But they're not good because they're a high-functioning offensive team. Okay, here's my next one that's contrary to groupthink that is just not allowed to be mentioned. But I have done the research, and he's defied logic forever, and it's just got to be mentioned. LeBron James has played 44,000 regular season minutes. He played the most minutes last year he's played in any season since he was 26 years old. He played 3,026 regular season minutes. He played 10% more than he did in the two previous years and 20% more than he did when he was 30. He's played don't even need to get, add to this, but his playoff, he has played an additional 10,000 playoff minutes. He played 922 playoff minutes last year, which is more than any year he has since he played 960 in Miami. He combined in both seasons last year to play 3,100 minutes of basketball. He had not done that since the 2006-2007 season. He's superhuman. He's incredible. He's amazing. He's the greatest player of all time. At some point, it comes to an end. I'm not saying it's coming to an end this year, but he's on a not very good roster and his defense has been terrible, frankly, the last few years. And at some point, it doesn't hold up. The only guys in the NBA who've played more minutes than him are 17 guys. And don't think of their careers. Think about where they were at the end. So he just surpassed Joe Johnson, Moses Malone, Robert Parrish, Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce, he's going to get Paul Pierce in the first third of the season. Ray Allen, John Havlicek, Gary Payton, Tim Duncan. He'll be Reggie Miller, John Stockton. He should surpass most of those this year to go into about 9th or 10th or 11th all time in NBA minutes played. Those guys were struggling by then. I get he's superhuman, but at some point it's happening to him too. And the final one is the Jimmy Butler talk, I think, is offline a little bit. Jimmy Butler is holding out, that's really what he's doing, because he wants a 5-year max contract deal. The teams that are trading for him are Philadelphia, Miami, and the Clippers. I'm not sure that any of them really want to, other than the Clippers, give him a 5-year max deal. The only thing he wants is a 5-year max deal. He, in theory, does not want it from Minnesota because he wants to go play somewhere else. What we don't know is when he can't get the 5-year max deal from somebody else, is he willing to go back to Minnesota, and is Minnesota willing to give it to him? I don't feel like this has been discussed enough. At some point in the process, Jimmy Butler's agent is going to be talking to these other teams and saying, we just want to make sure you're giving us the 5-year max deal. And what happens when they say, well, we can't guarantee that? Then all of a sudden, maybe Thibodeau is playing this right, and he ends up coming back to Minnesota. Okay, so that's the first thing. And I thought, there has been a lot of talk about him and Karl Anthony Towns and all that, and there's the whole brother thing with Higgins. We'll see. That's certainly part of it, right? But just keep an eye on it. Because if it's really about money and nothing else, I'm not sure Jimmy Butler. I don't think the word I'm getting is I'm not sure there's a lot of teams in the league that want to go give it Jimmy Butler a 5-year max deal at 30 years old. The other one I would point out to you is I don't think Minnesota did a lot of favors for themselves in the offseason by adding Derrick Rose to their rotation in front of Tyus Jones and the losing Bielitsa and having some of the moves there. I think that hurts them, but losing Jamal Crawford. If Andrew Wiggins were to become less terrible and they give the ball to Karl Anthony Towns more, they're not done. Karl Anthony Towns is amazing, and he only used 16 scoring opportunities a night last year. If you suddenly give Karl Anthony Towns the ball the way he should get it, the same level that James Harden does at 24 or Kevin Durant at 21, or maybe the best example is Anthony Davis at 23 scoring opportunities a game. You give that to Karl Anthony Towns, he's the second best offensive player in the league. Nobody's better than Steph. So those are some thoughts, some different opinions today on the NBA. Have you heard of Vivid Seats? Vivid Seats is an online event ticket masterplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experience that lasts a lifetime. Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. Get that great experience. And if you go to the App Store, you download Vivid Seats at Google Play or on the App Store. Enter the promo code LOCKEDON and you receive $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% guarantee. So great prices, easy purchasing experience, give you your seat that you want, your favorite live events. It's Vivid Seats, $20 off, $200 or more for off purchases for new customers at Vivid Seats by using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON for your promo code. It's a great time. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
Let's get to know Naz Long a little bit. Let's start with a name, because I just shortened it because it was easy. But yeah, there's more to it. Give us a background. What is it like? What do you call yourself, and what's the backstory on it?
Well, my name is Nazareth Mitru Long. When I introduce myself, I do just say Naz. So it's very short, and it's smooth, so people don't have to, pronounce a lot of letters. But it's a very strong name. I haven't met anybody else named Nazareth. It's, of Greek and Trinidadian origin. My name is biblical, just like the rest of my siblings. And it's just something that, my parents came up with, and, I'm glad they did, man, because I think it's unique for sure.
And who's Mitru and who's Long?
My mom is Mitru and my dad's Long.
And what's the origins or ethnicity of the two of them that brought this whole thing together?
My Mitru is Greek, and then my dad is Trinidadian, so Long is Trinidadian.
If you took me to your hometown, what would you show me?
I'd show you all the great places as far as, the malls. I'd show you the schools. I'd show you the people. It's easy to just walk around and enjoy Mississauga. It's easy to take a quick trip down to Toronto, which is one of the best cities and most diverse cities in the world, man. I'd show you just a little bit of everything that Canada has to offer.
I'd want to go to Toronto really fast because it's my favorite city.
Oh, yeah. You already know, man.
Canadian basketball player. Where does that come from?
Born in Canada, born and raised, and just
Vince Carter.
My favorite.
Yeah, you're not a hockey player.
I got you. I just picked up a ball at a young age from my older brother. I tried hockey one time, just skating, and I busted my mouth open, never turned back to that. I fell in love with the game at a young age. Definitely Vince Carter, went to his camps a bunch. Steve Nash, someone who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, was definitely a big inspiration as well. Those guys had an impact on the community, and one of those people that it touched was myself. And I'd be lying if I said they didn't have an impact.
You said you had a brother.
Yep.
Where are you in the birth order, and how many of them are there?
Well, not only do I have one brother, I have five, and I have four sisters. So my dad has 10 kids. My mom just has four kids, and I'm the oldest out of those four. But as far as the 10 go, I'm right in the middle.
So one of the reasons that I always ask about birth order is I'm a big believer that the youngest is always the one. You know, I'll never forget, like, Trevor Booker will tell you for endlessly, like, my brother's so great. He was so, yeah. Right? So when you're playing, did you play, you were the oldest of the four of your mom. Did you play against the other siblings? Were the youngster trying to compete against those older brothers?
I always was, yeah. I have two older brothers, and then I also have three younger brothers, but they were too young at the time when we really got into playing in the backyard and on the driveway late nights, just turning on the light. And I was that young guy. My uncle used to bring a bunch of his friends over. My brother used to bring his friends over, and I was always the young kid who just wanted to play. And thank God they did, man, because it got me better for sure.
How many people were living in the house at one time?
My goodness, in my house? Man, definitely double digits. It wasn't always just my siblings either. It's like cousins, like, you know.
What was it like?
It was controlled chaos, I'd say that. It was fun because a kid like myself, we always played a game called Manhunt. It's basically tag, and you just chase around trying to find people. We would use the whole block because we had so many people. And we'd set up trampolines and different things, and we had a big enough house to where we could use the whole house, and my parents didn't care, man. It was an awesome childhood.
If you took me to your childhood room, what did it look like?
You know, it's filled with all the intramural, volleyball, bocce, tennis, all the basketball, you know, all those trophies. But you definitely find a common denominator in seeing more basketball participation things than other sports. You'd see a bunch of jerseys on the wall, you know, just a typical young teenager's basketball room.
Did you still have your old childhood, like, comforter and covers, or do you matured out to like the navy blue at some point?
Yeah, matured out. I don't actually know what if we didn't have so many people in our house and if stealing comforters wasn't a common theme in my house, I think I'd still have mine. But yeah, that's long gone.
It's always great to hear about the Flash Gordon or the whatever the Ninja Turtles that are still on the bed. Yeah. When you were playing with all these games in the backyard, who were you? Who did you pretend to be?
You know, as far as like superheroes or things like that, or just
Steve Nash or Vince Carter.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, the replica. We bring the net down, and I mean, everybody was Vince. It wasn't just myself. Everybody was playing Vince, and everybody had a Vince Carter jersey. The windmill. You know, he was the guy. You know, through the legs, he was the guy. Like, that's definitely who we all wanted to be like.
What was your worst chore as a kid?
My worst chore. One time my dad had me like pick up and bring bricks to like from one side of our backyard to the other side, and we have kind of a big backyard, so it was a process. So yeah.
First nickname?
Nazzy J. Nazzy J was my first nickname. Drill.
Sorry. The peanut gallery of Royce O'Neill has entered. You're wearing number 30. Any reason?
Nothing specific. I mean, my birthday's on the 3rd. My number was originally 3. But I think that Ricky Rubio has earned that number for many reasons.
You didn't think you should come in and say, dude, I want 3?
You know, I was contemplating it, you know, but especially because he got the flow going and he got the swag out. Now, I think he really deserves it.
Okay. Yeah. You know, he's got enough clothing deals that maybe he'll just get you some clothes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you fit those European cuts, though.
Hey, man, I support the year. They know swag over there. Send this to him. Matter of fact, send this to him. I need him to hear this.
Okay. What do you like to do in your downtime?
You know, honestly, I like watching shows. I love watching movies. I go to the movies a bunch by myself. I've never been a big reader, but, you know, Coach Martin has given me a couple books to kind of start reading. So
what are those?
The Coaching Class is one that I'm reading. Again,
Captain Class or The Coaching Class?
Yeah, Captain Class, yeah. Yeah, yeah, so I'm working my way through that right now.
It's a good one. A little Derek Jeter talking there. Mm-hmm. What is your guilty pleasure?
Oh, my God. I love ice cream on Sundays. I love candy. Those are definitely my guilty pleasures for sure.
What is the most memorable moment of your career?
The most memorable moment of my career, are you talking about my NBA career or G League? Or
no, I mean, you can take me back to beating like one of your older brothers for all I care.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah. The day I, you know, just for you say, I mean, the day that I could beat my older brother one-on-one, that was a day that I'll never forget because I really truly believed to myself that I was good, you know, and I really thought that I could start doing something with this game. So, Yeah, man, if we're going that deep, then for sure there was one time I beat my brother in the backyard, and I'll never forget that.
Let's go there. That was kind of the next thing I was going to ask you. Like, what made you believe? Like, I know you're still in your mind on the journey, but you've made it. You're wearing a jersey, and, you know, you're coming to practice, and you're doing it again. Mm-hmm. What made you believe you could get here?
Because there was a point in, like, 7th and 8th grade where I was really competing and playing well and kind of better than a lot of people around me, but I knew that I had so much more room to grow. And I knew that I could be, like, more muscular, and I knew that I was going to get taller, and I knew that if I just paid attention to, like, what makes people actually good at, like, real basketball, that I could do that. And I had a great supporting cast, too. My parents believed in me. My brothers and sisters did, too. So I really just rode that wave of belief. That was it.
When you look back at yourself compared to the other kids, like, where were you different? What are the things you did differently as a kid on this journey?
Well, my first basketball league was in a Filipino league, so I was a center, and I was a center who could shoot, so I knew I wasn't really going to be a center. I was just among a bunch of people who were smaller than me, and that was something that I really took note of, and it was something that kind of separated me from the bunch, and I didn't just want to be good. Like, I wanted to be great, and I know I have a lot more to go now, but I think that's what really pushed me when I was younger to get me better.
They talk about the term grit as one that is to resist complacency. What allowed you to do that?
My parents, definitely. You know, always keeping me in line, whipping me into shape. If I ever got big-headed, my sisters, my mom would just tell me, like, calm down. You know, don't think you're too high for anybody, for sure. So I definitely have to say my family was my support system doing that.
Yes, thank you very much for the time. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, man.
That was kind of a Harry Potter interview. We were actually underneath a stairwell. I felt like we were living in Harry Potter's house doing that interview. Thanks to Naz Mitra-Long. Great guy. It was so fun to be with him last night at the season ticket holder event. Super good dude. Enjoy the game tonight. Ron and I will be live an hour beforehand on Periscope for you at Locked On Sports on Periscope. Glad to have you aboard. We'll also be Instagram. Hope you enjoyed the Instagram question and answer yesterday. That was a lot of fun. You can follow me at DLock09. Locked On NBA's for you every single day as well on the Locked On Podcast Network.